In the race for a clean energy future, seven massive U.S. hydrogen hubs were promised $7 billion in federal support. This week, we learned that up to 60% of that funding for four of those hubs is now at risk. As America's strategy seems to falter, where are the real centers of power in the new global hydrogen economy emerging? And what does that mean for Western companies caught in the middle? Welcome to Troy Technical Intelligence, your weekly briefing on the technology shaping global industry. I'm Susie.
And I'm Troy.
This week, it's all about hydrogen. We're seeing a massive global build-out of production, pipelines, and end-use technology. It's moving from PowerPoint presentations to concrete and steel. We're going to break down who is building the global supply chain, how Europe is constructing the infrastructure to use it, and what the strategic uncertainties in the U.S. mean for manufacturers and traders on both sides of the Atlantic. Troy, let's start with who's set to become the world's hydrogen superpower. It feels like a land grab.
It is. And the clear leaders are emerging in the Middle East and Australia, leveraging their immense renewable energy potential. Saudi Arabia's NEOM green hydrogen project is now over 80% complete and on track to produce 600,000 tons of green ammonia annually by the end of 2026. Similarly, Egypt is advancing projects like the $873 million New Damietta plant, and Jordan just approved Hinefer's $1 billion green ammonia project at Aqaba Port.
And you mentioned Australia?
Correct. Australia's Murchison Green Hydrogen Project in Western Australia is a monster. It's integrating 6 gigawatts of wind and solar to produce 2 million tons of renewable ammonia per year, specifically targeting Asian markets. They've secured $814 million in government funding and are targeting production by 2030. These aren't pilot programs. This is industrial-scale production.
So for a U.S. or a European manufacturer, say in the chemical or fertilizer industry, what does this new flood of supply mean?
It presents both a massive opportunity and a competitive threat. The opportunity is access to a potentially cheaper, decarbonized feedstock, green ammonia, from a diversity of new suppliers. This could lower production costs for things like fertilizers and industrial chemicals. The threat is that Middle Eastern and Australian producers could vertically integrate and begin exporting finished green products, directly competing with established Western manufacturers.
And for the trading companies and distributors who move these commodities around the world?
Their world is about to change. They need to be establishing relationships in Riyadh, Cairo, and Perth now. The key is to get in on the early offtake agreements. Securing long-term supply contracts from these new giga projects will be critical. Market timing is everything. Those who wait for the first shipment in 2026 will be too late.
So what's the actionable takeaway for an executive listening right now?
They need to task their strategic sourcing and corporate development teams with a dual mandate. First, map these emerging global supply hubs and model the landed cost of green ammonia and hydrogen in their key markets. Second, evaluate the risk of new, low-cost competition emerging from these same regions.
Okay, so we have this massive new supply of hydrogen and green ammonia coming from the Middle East and Australia, but it's useless if you can't get it to the industrial heartlands that need it. It sounds like Europe is aggressively building the infrastructure to become the prime customer.
That's exactly right. Europe is building the demand-side infrastructure. The Port of Rotterdam, already Europe's largest energy hub, is investing heavily to become a clean energy gateway. They're building the Netherlands' domestic hydrogen backbone, with the first section operational by 2026 and a connection to Germany by 2030. They're also building a 200-megawatt renewable hydrogen production facility set for 2027 operation.
So Rotterdam is the front door. How does it get from there to, say, a German steel plant?
Through projects like Germany's Flow Initiative, they are fast-tracking a national hydrogen core network, partly by repurposing existing natural gas pipelines, with some sections ready by 2025. Demand for access to this network is already exceeding their initial projections. In the UK, National Gas has proposed Project Union, a 300-mile hydrogen pipeline network to decarbonize industrial clusters on the East Coast. Europe is creating a continental-scale hydrogen grid.
How does this affect U.S. and European manufacturers specifically?
For European manufacturers, this is a huge competitive advantage. It means a reliable, large-scale supply of green hydrogen piped directly to their industrial sites is becoming a reality. This accelerates their ability to decarbonize production. U.S. manufacturers, by contrast, risk being left behind if a comparable domestic infrastructure network doesn't materialize at the same pace. They could face carbon border tariffs when exporting to Europe if their products have a higher carbon intensity.
And for trading companies?
They should be looking at the entire value chain. It's not just about shipping ammonia to Rotterdam anymore. The opportunity now is in securing pipeline capacity, developing storage solutions, and creating last-mile delivery services from the port to the factory. Partnerships with port authorities and pipeline operators like Natural Gas in the UK are key.
What's the immediate action item for executives?
If you are a European industrial executive, engage immediately with these pipeline initiatives like Flow and Project Union to ensure your facilities are on the connection map. If you are a U.S. executive, you need to be lobbying for and investing in similar midstream infrastructure to avoid falling into a competitive infrastructure gap with Europe.
Troy, that contrast you drew is stark. While Europe is laying hundreds of miles of pipeline, we have a headline this week that the U.S. Hydrogen Hubs program is facing major funding uncertainty. What's going on?
It's a significant policy shift. Reports indicate that 4 of the 7 federally backed hydrogen hubs, the ones in California, the Mid-Atlantic, Pacific Northwest, and Midwest, could see their share of the $7 billion in federal support cut by up to 60%. This uncertainty, combined with accelerated deadlines for qualifying for the 45V clean hydrogen tax credit, is forcing many of these projects to be reevaluated or scaled back.
So while Europe is accelerating, the U.S. is hitting the brakes. How does this directly impact a U.S. manufacturer who was counting on one of these hubs?
It creates tremendous uncertainty in their long-term planning. A manufacturer who located a new plant or planned a fuel switching project based on the promise of cheap, plentiful hydrogen from the California hub, for example, now faces a very real risk that the supply won't materialize at the scale or price point they expected. It could delay or kill major decarbonization investments.
Despite this big picture uncertainty, we are seeing some very focused private sector progress. Tell me about Charbonne.
Charbonne is a Canadian firm that illustrates a different strategy. Instead of waiting for massive federal programs, they are targeting a high-value niche, ultra-high-purity green hydrogen. They are building smaller, distributed production hubs to directly supply clients like semiconductor fabs, research labs, and data centers. Their 2026-2030 plan involves new hubs and expanding production in Sorel-Tracy, Canada, and Detroit.
So they're not trying to power the entire industrial Midwest. They're focused on customers who need specialty-grade hydrogen and will pay a premium for it. What's the lesson for Western companies here?
The lesson is that while large-scale government strategies are in flux, targeted opportunities in high-margin markets are moving forward now. For manufacturers, particularly in high-tech sectors like electronics, there's an opportunity to secure a green, reliable supply chain for a critical industrial gas. For trading and distribution companies, this points to a new market in specialty green gases, not just bulk commodities.
Actionable insight?
Don't wait for the perfect national strategy. Executives should identify their most critical hydrogen needs. If it's ultra-high purity for a specific process, engage with specialized suppliers like Charbonne now to lock in supply. If it's bulk hydrogen for heat and power, you need to begin contingency planning for a scenario where U.S. supply is delayed and more expensive than initially projected.
Let's shift from producing hydrogen to actually using it. The trucking industry seems to be a major battleground. We have two very different technology approaches making headlines in the U.S. and the U.K.
We do. In Southern California, Toyota and High Road Energy are deploying 40 Class 8 hydrogen fuel cell electric trucks. This is a full-service model. High Road provides the trucks and maintenance, while Toyota supplies the hydrogen fuel. It's a complete ecosystem play designed to prove the viability of fuel cell electric vehicles, or FCEVs, in a vital logistics corridor.
And in the UK, they're taking a different path?
A very different one. A UK firm, Metier Technologies, just got the country's first ever public road approval for a hydrogen internal combustion engine truck, or H2ICE. They converted an 18-ton DAF truck to run on hydrogen in a conventional engine. It produces zero tailpipe CO2. Their plan is to start commercial deployment in 2027 and convert 10,000 existing trucks across Europe by 2031.
So, fuel cells versus internal combustion. What does this mean for U.S. and European truck manufacturers and fleet operators?
It means the technology pathway for decarbonizing heavy transport is not settled. For manufacturers like Daimler Truck and Volvo, who are part of the huge European H2 Accelerate Trucks project deploying 125 fuel cell trucks with 30 million euros in funding, the FCEV route is primary. But the H2ICE approach offers a potentially cheaper and faster way for fleet operators to decarbonize their existing diesel trucks rather than buying brand new FCEV vehicles.
U.S. manufacturers need to be watching this H2ICE development very closely as a potential disruptive technology.
What about moving hydrogen itself across oceans? That seems like a huge hurdle.
It is. And an Australian company, Proviris Energy, is pioneering a new solution. They are developing the H2Neo, a carrier ship designed to transport compressed hydrogen. This avoids the energy-intensive process of liquefying hydrogen or converting it to ammonia. They just signed a cooperation agreement with Japan's K-Line and are targeting a final investment decision for a project in Norway by late 2027, with operations beginning around 2030.
What should Western trading and logistics companies take from this?
They need to understand that the future of energy shipping won't be monolithic. There will be specialized vessels for liquid hydrogen, ammonia, and now compressed hydrogen. The H2Neo model could be more economical for shorter routes, for instance, from North Africa to Europe or from Australia to Singapore. Logistics firms should be modeling the costs of these different maritime transport options.
Your actionable point here?
For fleet operators, begin pilot programs with both FCEV and H2ICE technologies to understand the real-world operational costs have billahis for your specific routes. For shipping and trading executives, the time is now to partner with technology developers like Proviris to gain early expertise in the new logistics of hydrogen transport.
Finally, Troy, we can't have a conversation about global supply chains without talking about India and China. They aren't just participants. Their scale can redefine the entire market. What's happening in India?
India has launched its national green hydrogen mission, and the ambition is staggering. The target is 5 million tons of annual green hydrogen production by 2030, which they estimate will require 125 gigawatts of new renewable energy and attract over $96 billion in investment. They are aggressively building a domestic supply chain, recently awarding 3 gigawatts of annual electrolyzer manufacturing capacity to 15 different companies.
So they're building the tools to make the hydrogen, not just the hydrogen itself.
Precisely. They are also creating demand. They've approved a 50,000 tons per year green hydrogen supply for public sector oil companies like IOC and BPCL to use in their refineries. This is a top-to-bottom national strategy to become a self-reliant green hydrogen powerhouse.
And in China, we have a major deal between Sinopec and BHI Tianjin.
Yes, and this deal is a blueprint for how China plans to integrate hydrogen into its existing energy system. Sinopec will build a facility in Inner Mongolia to produce 100,000 tons of green hydrogen per year. They will then build a new long-distance dedicated hydrogen pipeline to the industrial hub of Tianjin. There, BHI Tianjin will blend that green hydrogen into the city's natural gas network, with trials running from 2026 to 2028.
Blending it into the gas grid is a huge step. What are the implications of these moves by India and China for Western firms?
For U.S. and European manufacturers, it means two things. First, India is set to become a major competitor in manufacturing the core technology, specifically electrolyzers, potentially driving down global prices. Second, both India and China will become massive consumers of hydrogen, which will impact global supply and demand dynamics. But they will also become major exporters of products made with green hydrogen, like green steel and green chemicals.
So what should Western trading companies be focused on?
The opportunity is in technology transfer and partnerships. Indian and Chinese firms will need Western technology and operational expertise to meet these ambitious goals. For traders, it's about understanding these new domestic ecosystems. Sourcing low-cost electrolyzers from India or partnering with Sinopec on hydrogen blending technologies could be major strategic moves.
And the actionable insight for our listeners.
Executives need to update their competitive maps immediately. India and China are no longer just future markets. They are becoming integrated hydrogen economies. Your strategy must account for them as major competitors, large-scale customers, and potentially vital technology partners. Underestimating their speed and scale would be a critical mistake.
All right, Troy, a huge amount of ground covered this week. Let's distill it down. What are the three key strategic takeaways for executives from this week's intelligence?
First, the global supply of green hydrogen is materializing fast, with the Middle East and Australia taking a decisive lead. For Western companies, this means your future feedstock and your future competition will likely come from these regions. You must engage now. Second, Europe is winning the infrastructure race. By building out ports like Rotterdam and pipeline networks like Flow and Project Union, it is positioning itself as the world's premier, most connected market for hydrogen. This creates a significant competitive advantage for manufacturers located there. Third,
U.S. policy uncertainty is creating a strategic risk. While niche markets like high-purity hydrogen are advancing, the lack of a clear, consistent federal strategy for large-scale infrastructure puts U.S. manufacturers at a disadvantage relative to their European counterparts. Companies need to plan for potential delays and higher costs in the U.S. market.
So the message is, the global hydrogen economy is here, Europe is building the plumbing for it, and the U.S. needs to clarify its strategy or risk being left behind.
That's the precise state of play.
That's all the time we have for this week's briefing. The transition to a global hydrogen economy is accelerating, and we'll continue to provide you with the intelligence you need to navigate the risks and seize the opportunities. Join us again next week for more Troy Technical Intelligence.
To make sure you don't miss it, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening.